it just stays small, you know, and I think that's valuable for the market, for the culturality of all things agave, and I think it's the way it should be, you know.
Hello and welcome to Elixir of the Gods. This is the official start of season 2.
Correct.
Hello, Diego, my old pal from
Mexico.
Hello,
Albert. How are you?
I'm good.
Nice to be here again.
Nice to be here again. And again, we have a guest in this episode, Christian.
Hola, ¿qué tal? Buenos días, tardes.
He's not a new guy in the show. He has been with us, I think, once or...
Yeah, it was this Puntas Gracias episode, if I'm correct.
Yeah, right. I was wondering if you were in also... I thought you recorded in the... The Steel Berlin, so this big.
I didn't end up recording.
Okay. That's why I thought you were there too.
Yeah.
But, okay. Exactly. Well, Christian is not new. He's not only today here to talk because he's a very knowledgeable guy. He's here because he's also our good friend, and we're very glad he's here with us today.
And I'm handsome too,
Christian. So, how are you related to Agave World? Tell us a bit about you and your company that you're running here in Berlin.
Yeah, well, first of all, I want to say hi to the people that are listening to us. I'm happy to be available to speak to a public that has interest into all things Agave. This fellow's already said, I'm Christian. I run Agavera, which is a platform of distribution. And lately also education about agave distills. I'm based in Berlin. And yeah, so I like to do different things with agave and with Mexican culture in Germany. And yeah, that's what I'm doing, actually.
Very good. And today I think we want to talk about a specific area of Mexico, right?
Jalisco.
Yes, in this second season, part of the idea was to go a bit deeper in the regions. So we were thinking for this first chapter, bring a knowledgeable guy from Jalisco who knows his stuff about Jalisco and talk a bit about the history and why is Jalisco such a powerful state for agave distills in general. And well, we're going to go deep into that now.
Okay, and we're also going to try a little bit of some Jalisco spirits, I guess.
Jalisco's
right?
Finest,
oh, yeah.
Where is it, if you imagine Mexico as a triangle shape, is it in the north, is it in the south, is it in the west, is it in the east?
It's in the middle on the west, okay?
Yeah, so Pacific side.
Pacific side in the middle of the triangle.
It's a beautiful city, by the way. We should visit if you're there.
Yeah, it's a state, but...
Well, Guadalajara is a city.
No, but we were talking about Jalisco. Yeah, no. Me and Christian, we pick on each other a lot. So,
because we're from Jalisco.
So, Christian, Jalisco, in the history of agave distills, some would say, has a very relevant role.
Yeah, of course. I mean, Jalisco has been producing agave spirits since the very beginning of all things agave and all things distilled out of agave in Mexico itself. We have a lot of information about agave production in Jalisco, concretely in Amatitán and Tequila and all these particular areas. And we would like to go deep into it, you know, like where it really started, how it really divided or differentiated itself from what it is now considered as the biggest denomination of origin, which is mezcal. What we want to get into this moment or in time where it really differentiates each other. As far as we know, you know, if there's more information that you people want to share with us, people that are listening to the podcast, you're welcome to share this information as well.
Correct. Nice. If we make any mistakes, also correct. We don't think we're the most knowledgeable persons. We just want to share what we know.
Exactly. And if you can teach us and enlighten us,
we are always glad to learn a bit.
Come on our show as well. We're happy to have you. For me, as the least knowledgeable in this round, if I get an agave spirit from Jalisco, can I get mezcal or is it something different? What is produced in Jalisco in terms of mezcal? Can it be Bacanora? Can it be Raicilia? Can it be Sotol? What can you get out of Jalisco?
Yeah. Well, now in 2019, you can get, in Jalisco, you can get mainly out of agave, three things. tequila in all these different forms. Añejo, reposado, blanco, of course, joven. And this new premium, what is it called? Never try one. This extra añejo or cristalino, which is, you know, it's a subject of some laughs every now and then between me and Diego. And of course, you can get raicilla, which is a product that I personally like a lot. And I think it tells a huge underground story about agave production. And of course, you can also get agave distilled, which is nor raicilla nor tequila, but the gray, beautiful, tasty line in between that not a lot of people know.
So I can not get a mezcal, but it doesn't say mezcal.
No, the tequila industry forbid the denomination of origin to enter the mezcal into Jalisco. They were already too big. So that's what they say, and I believe it.
Okay, and then for me as to understand, you talked about joven, blanco, joven, reposado, añejo. I think we never have really explained it on the podcast. So what's the difference between the...
I'm sorry, I mean blanco and joven will be the same category. So usually you get blanco out of tequila. Mm-hmm. It can also be joven. It really depends on the brand. And then añejo and reposado go through wood. There's usually two different types of wood that are used. It can be French barrels, oak, or American, both used from previous spirits.
So blanco or joven means they are bottled directly
from the distillery.
From the distillery. Yeah. And reposado, añejo means they are stored in a...
Aged
in a barrel.
Aged from 0 to 6 months, it's called reposado. From 6 months to 2 years, it's called añejo. And from 2 years on, I think it's the extra añejo.
Super añejo.
New tendencies that honestly didn't exist. They started existing when the big brands started buying the big houses, the big tequila factories in Mexico. And then they started with this. Mm. Now they even have three distillations, which...
Yeah. Like extra suave.
Okay, so it becomes, as you said that before, it becomes more of a vodka than having
you start stealing from the drink, as well as when you age it. When you're talking about tequila, and I know people who know much more than me who like their tequila to be reposado or woody. What I mean with this comment is, when you put it through wood, then the wood will influence the flavor for sure. And when you wanna try the plant, which has been growing on the fields for so long, you want to do joven, exactly. But some people like it woody. Yeah.
Okay. So sorry, I.
No, very important.
Got you off track. So.
So what do you think? We go like in a timeline so that we can try and explain.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be fun. You know, talking about the.
Let's go to the 1700s.
Exactly, that to go way back where
history.
there was not a lot of difference between what was nowadays called tequila, and what was a mezcal. Back in the day, everything was vino de mezcal. Mm? Mm. And then you were telling more or less where it was from. So in the case of what it's now tequila, it would be vino mezcal de Jalisco, you know, from this very specific area, or vino mezcal de tequila if you want to get into the specifics. Nevertheless, the first real production or the first real happening of this very concrete spirit was happening in Amatitan, not in tequila, which is funny, you know. Amatitan is just right next to tequila, and it's also, of course, within the range of denomination of origin. The problem, I guess, with Amatitan was that there was not enough water. And then it moved to the next town where it was plenty, tequila.
So Emardoretan was a place, actually.
Amatitan.
Amatitan.
That's right.
Amatitan.
Amatitan, okay.
Yeah. Where, I mean, nowadays there are still amazing brands that produce there. You know, they have like the production, which is still huge, and you know, it dominates the landscape, which is beautiful to see. And it has also some difficulties or some challenges, definitely, as well, which we can get afterwards. So, I mean, at the beginning of time, there was, in this particular region, there was no difference between which agave you were using. They were only using different types of agave. This guy who really started to tell the story about agave spirits, Lázaro de Aguirre, right?
No. I don't remember the
Lázaro de Aguirre, yeah. I think he was in the 1920s, something like this. And he was mentioning, you know, that this specific spirits were produced by the indigenous people there.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, we think that tequila was really developed and made from the beginning on from the mestizos or the land owners, or even the Spaniards.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the beginning really was with the indigenous people that were making and distilling this spirit in order to for their own religious...
According to literature, yes.
Yeah, and you called it vino del mezcal. So
vino del mezcal,
so
yeah.
Wine, basically.
Basically wine, yeah. But wine from agave. They were used... Back in the day, I mean, we have a graphic here to share, which also I think it would be interesting to share in the link of Elixir of the Gods for people to see and analyze. Yes, it's in Spanish, but yes, it's worth your
time.
Your time.
There is
you know?
A history. So we have the map here. So it shows the history from the 1600s to 1964.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to put that on the...
Yeah, that's very important to so that people can see that in Jalisco, the separation, so the Tequilana Weber entered only in the last century. So before, the different agaves that they were using, and there were many, not like three agaves, no, they, how many? Nine?
Nine, and some of them are subspecies of Espadín, Angustifolia. I think we might know what Angustifolia means. It's the scientific name for the Espadín plant, which is the, I would say, the strongest agave plant in Mexico, the one that grows all over. And Tequilana Weber, at the time, and still is, one of the subspecies of it. So you were using different species. Some of them are still being used in Mexico and in Jalisco itself to produce what we will call raicilla, or what you will call an agave spirit. And slowly, this different diversities were being filtered and taken away because of the characteristics of their plant regarding both the yielding of the plant itself,
mm-hmm.
the years, and the ways of reproduction that they had. Leaving Tequilana Weber at the very end in a more technical way, not so much about the profile and the taste, but more about these technicalities of the time and the yield,
so
and the way of reproduction.
It grows faster, it's clonable, it's economic aspects that made Tequilana Weber so successful for tequila.
That's right, and that was just beautifully paired with the industrialization that took place mm-hmm. around the 50s, hand to hand also with Mexican cinema, which I believe, Diego, maybe you're here with me, is worth mentioning as well.
Mexican cinema.
The golden yeah. age of Mexican cinema, which uh-huh. started, you know...
the late 20s.
Late 20s, all the way into the 50s. And, you know, there was... Around these dates, there was a war going on. Maybe you guys have heard about it. We're not going to get into it. but this was a great time for Mexican cinema to bloom into the world. And we already had, like... All this Mexican, now maybe a little bit cliches, but back in the day, there were representations of culturality.
Mm.
And you had the charro mexicano, you had a specific spirit, which in nowadays is considered tequila, that was also in the same region of Guadalajara. You know, mm-hmm. you had the charros and you had the mariachi.
You have the tequila. So it had a combination of factors that made it
popular for the world.
Exactly.
And became kind of stereotype.
And there are stereotypes of Mexicanity which in for foreigners. Mm-hmm. because for Mexicans, they're not necessarily stereotypes for us, you know? But for foreigners, of course, mariachi, Mexico. Sombrero, big sombrero like this, Mexico. Yeah. Tequila, Mexico, you know?
I'm looking at one bottle that we're going to sample today. And maybe we can start with this or maybe we can do it later, you know? It's the bottle has exactly that, you know, a charro with a big, 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 fat, beautiful hat,
okay.
Seducing
a girl,
a tapatía, of course,
so,
a girl,
and
by the dance.
Charro is who is a charro? What is a charro? Is a guy or
a charro is a guy who makes tricks with a horse, right? Like you have like some specific, it's a very specific sport mm-hmm. of
called charrería,
of course, and
practiced by a charro.
Mm-hmm.
And there are lines of tradition for charrería and for charro families. They are like Sons of Charros, and like to be a real charro, you have to have a lineage. It's not like you decide to be a charro, you put on a sombrero.
No.
They are like,
this is connected.
They have a culture around it. Very cool culture.
This is connected to the land ownership around the towns of Guadalajara, you know?
Okay, which, so you only could be one if you had the means to...
More or less. You could kind of say this, you know, but it was beautiful, like this pairing of the Mexican cinema again into the what, you know, it was the mindset of, okay, let's drink something from Mexico, and that would be a vino mezcal from tequila because of the connection with Mexican cinema. And you have a huge range of artists that were really representing and putting Mexico in the map according to this. And then, of course, industrialization was taking place and world demand was already there for this spirit because people wanted to have a relationship with it.
Guadalajara was also a very important city for the Spanish. This is like, we're going back like 100 years, but Guadalajara, the name of Guadalajara was Nueva Galicia back. The Spanish tried to create a map in Mexico that looked like
Spain.
Like Spain, exactly. So the farthest they had gone northwest was Jalisco, Guadalajara. So it was their Nueva Galicia, so Galicia in the Finisterre, you know. So, but they knew it was a very fertile territory, so they created excellent means of transport from... It's very good still, exactly. And the means of transport between tequila or Amatitán back in the day and Guadalajara were already good because they were bringing in the 1700s, they were already bringing, I don't know how it's measured today, but the books say 150 cargas or 12
arrobas,
which honestly, I would have to check that, how much that is, but it's something already that they were already bringing to the city and then redistributing into Mexico.
Into the rest of Mexico and the capital.
Of that spirit, of that liquid.
Of that specific region, you know? So it was already very popular.
Let's have a sip of the...
Post?
The tequila with the charro. Tapatito.
Tapatio.
Tapatio.
Tapatio. This is a wonderful tequila. This is a wonderful tequila. This tequila is from the other region in Jalisco. The history of it is kind of weird because they found out that the plants grew also in that territory very good, but it's from the Los Altos. It's from Arandas, I think.
Correct.
So, and now if you try the tequilas from the Los Altos de Jalisco, they're more floral, less earthy. I really like what they did in Los Altos. And for me, this is a wonderful expression.
It's one of the best tequilas. It's a good example of a solid classic. And then you also, I think the bottle tells you already quite a lot about the spirit. You can already see this product in the European market. Mm-hmm. So it's worth seeking and it's worth having, you know, in your personal collection.
I look at the bottle and it reminds me like a cheap knockoff vodka. So the drink is much higher quality than the label.
I think it's intended.
Yeah.
I think they want it to look like a traditional tequila from the years, from this cinema years.
Chris, yeah, it looks very 50s to me. Yeah.
And for example, in the bottle, let's get into it, you know, because it's funny. And it's true. I mean, you get the classic formula of a tequila bottle. It's a very masculine one that usually has also this engraving in the bottle itself.
Yeah. So you have the dancer and the girl and the name again in the glass.
In the glass itself. I mean, it's not a generic bottle. It's a bottle that is made exclusively
for
this brand. You know, and this happens. You see it in different brands that are old or have this very masculine kind of a profile that tells the story about the charro and all of this. So I mean, I believe these products are around, and some of them are already getting into the European market, which is nice because they really set a great standard. I believe this tequila is good and it's right there and
very smooth
in the good smooth standard. You know, we have a product that is distilled 40 ABV. I believe they also have a Fuerte, which is still a little bit higher.
Yeah, so
a bit higher on IBB. We will have to try it, I guess, because I don't recall the taste of it. Yeah, I mean, so this is like the image that was standardized.
Can I buy this from you?
No, I don't have it. Agavera doesn't have this product in the portfolio, but as I was already talking with Diego before about that, I have seen this product already in the web. So you can buy it online already. And I will encourage you to try it if you feel like hitting a good tequila for a good price.
And this is a good quality. I think this is a good starter drink because it's not overwhelming. It's not like extremely smoky and it's like
no smoke at all. Yeah, but don't fool yourself. I mean, Tapatio goes through an industrial process of production, and we wanted to get it also into which was this tipping point that changed the production of tequila that was kind of artisanal, very similar to what we know now as raicilla or mezcal. So it was the mist of industrialization, and people wanted to improve the process of the production itself. So there were different things that were being done, changing the conical oven pit, barbacoa pit, into the mampostería oven or the masonry oven, the cooking with the gas, which was something not very, you know, important. And it really expanded the quantities that you could actually cook, and it will take away the smoke, the agave itself. And as well, you got this machine that was
the masher.
The masher of the juice. Masher.
They created a masher that would do it instead of the tajona. So, and it was, it's a patent still, I think. You're going to see, there is some literature on it, Albert, so that you can understand the machine.
Okay.
And that's 1891, if I'm not wrong, Albert. Can you correct me?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
1891, yeah.
Patented May 12, 1891.
Exactly, exactly.
We have a picture here.
Los señores Castaños López.
We should maybe post this.
Yeah.
Say it again, because that's important.
Yeah, the Los señores Castaños López de Lara were the ones who invented and owned the patent of this first technical
masher,
you know, that really, really changed things in the way you were making the production of mezcal. And I believe, to my understanding, you know, of the things that I have read and shared with Diego, because we tend to bounce a lot of information, that was really like the drop that changed things in quality and taste and profile of how an agave distilled will taste at the end after the distillation.
So they also had a bit more of consistency in the taste because the methods industrialized and more standardized.
Yeah.
And
exactly. More yield as well, you know?
Exactly.
More quantity, which is
important. They had good roads. So what we're trying to picture here is from the 1700s, because before we know they may be distilling, but it's irrelevant, the quantities. But in the 1700s, they were already distilling serious quantities. In the 1800s, they were already designing machines to create a better production and a faster production. And in the 1900s, they're the first ones who create a rule on it. So, yes, it's impossible to say this is the best agave distill. No, not at all. That's not what we're trying to say. We're trying to just picture the history of why it went from being the same to super powerful agave distilled tequila, you know?
I would say, like, maybe not super powerful, but definitely the one that represents or represented Mexican culture in as a spirit. And it's funny to see the whole thing, because it was really, I mean, there were definitely different agaves that were used in the production of what we know now as tequila until the 1949 or something like this, where you were using different species of agaves like chato, pata de mula, azul, that nowadays is the Tequilana Weber. It was
blue.
Blue, exactly. Yeah. And you have more, you know, I could read here like Morañejo, chato already said, mano larga, sopilote, pie de mula or pata de mula, chino, and some of these agaves that are now excluded for the production of what it is tequila are used for the production of what it is raicilla today, you know, which is within the same territory and within the same, let's say, biodiversity, which, you know, it's also fair to say that Jalisco holds the second biggest diversity of agaves after Oaxaca. And that tells a story about, okay, so how many raw material do we have and what's the diversity on it? So tequila really took it in this very like fast lane, which is good, you know. At a certain point, it has its difficulties with the ways of reproduction, that is only by the hijuelos, by the baby agaves that are done, and not by the pollinization that really enforces and protects in the species itself, and then we have the rest of the diversity just for what it is, raicilla, which is the niche of the niche, you know. So if you see mezcal as a niche for tequila, raicilla will be and will stay
the niche
as the niche of the niche, which is interesting and is something that we have also in front of us. So I think it would be nice to get a little bit more into raicilla vibes and leave tequila with its place and what it is culturally, which I will say is honorable. It also has its weaknesses and areas to improve. But I believe it's something that really gave a first structure and also a first way of saying, like, okay, we have gone this way with the mixed stories of, you know, like mixing other sugars with agave in order to not make the same mistake. So, I mean, we have a path that is nice to see and to recognize as a cultural heritage. And as we go along with other agave spirits, you are, you know, you have the opportunity of protecting yourself of this historical mistakes, let's put it like this, or knowledge.
Before we go into the next topic, we talked about Mexican cinema and classic Mexican cinema. Do you have one or two movies to recommend from that
of
era?
Of course, Nosotros los Pobres.
Nosotros los Pobres.
Would be a classic.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's by Luis Buñuel, who everybody in the cinema, works in cinema knows who Luis Buñuel is. He was a Nosotros los, I'm not sure if it's from Luis Buñuel. Anyhow, Nosotros los Pobres.
And any movie of Pedro Infante is worth seeing, you know.
Ustedes los Ricos.
So we're going to find a link to the show notes that describes the movie.
Yeah, but good idea.
Yeah, so to have a bit of a picture in the mind how the good society idea. Was and how we got to the point where tequila was becoming tequila. I think that
exactly. Could
be it. Yeah, that definitely paints a picture. Mm.
Did you take a picture of the mashing?
Yeah, I did. Yeah? Took a picture.
Let's post that too, so that people can see. It's just a diagram, but you can understand that this diagram, that's a machine. You know, you're not having a donkey going around or you going around with a stone.
Sophisticating process, exactly. No doubt.
Yeah,
exactly.
So where should we go next?
I mean, I would love to go to a rare area of Jalisco, aiming to Colima, which is another state, and presenting this product, which I do have in portfolio, and it's worth your attention. It's La Venenosa, Sierra Sur. It's a beautiful expression from Arturo Campos, father and son. And I mean, you have a product that is still in an area that is kind of like the limbo of agave spirits. There's few or non producers there, but for Arturo that produced this spirit in this specific region, imagine that you're like on the skirts of the volcano. This volcano is called El Volcán de Colima. And it's, you know, it's really, it really divides the states. You have an artisanal production, what you would call in mezcal as an artisanal production. So double distilled clay pot.
Also ancestral. It would qualify for ancestral, I would say, no?
No, because he uses desgarradora. No, he doesn't use a... He doesn't use a...
Tajona, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
So ancestral means old, like donkeys and hand and a lot of hand. So he uses some industrial methods or a little bit.
This thing we just took a picture of.
That you know, after the cooking, the cooking happens in a barbacoa oven, pit oven over the ground. And then he uses the help of a machine called desgarradora who shreds the cooked agave.
And it says molienda.
Mm-hmm. Molienda, mecánica.
Which means mechanical.
Mm. And molienda means...
the grinding.
Mashing.
Grinding.
Exactly.
Grinding, okay. So this is a red La Venenosa. We had a couple of La Venenosa before, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know
this
what we're talking about.
This is a beautiful expression, yeah.
Yeah. Some beautiful prize was given to us on the Stille Berlin this year, 2019.
And I see you have a bronze sticker on it.
Yeah, it won in the Stille Berlin the bronze medal for the one of the best agave distills.
I would say it's an expression that really tells a story of the region. with beautiful minerality that comes from the volcano with an agave that is, I mean, they name it cenizo, but it's not really categorized taxonomically. So it's from the region and it's just from there. And I believe it's a true expression that really paints you a picture about what happens in Jalisco, that it resembles a little bit like the classic taste of a mezcal from elsewhere, let's say Oaxaca or, you know, other state like Durango. But it stands on its own on profile and stuff, and it's an exciting drink, and it's worth seeking out and sipping it. If you're in Berlin, you can find it in a decent number of bars and restaurants, and soon it will be also everywhere in Germany.
True. It's important here, I think, to point out, we tried to make the flight today on a north, center, south of the state flight. Christian curated it. I had planned a different one, but Christian corrected me, and I think he did it right. And now we went to the center because, of course, the center of the
beginning
history
of
in the state had to go down to the tequila route. So we went, we started in the center. Now we went south all the way down to the almost to the next state, which is Colima, also very near Michoacán. It's in this triangle region. By the way, if we ever go there, Albert, you'll eat the best carnitas. You're gonna die, man.
Yeah, man.
You're gonna die. And we should go there. And finally, we're gonna go up north. There's hardly norther than we're gonna go in the state of within the state of Jalisco. There's hardly a northern part. And this, with the next agave distill, which has its own history. It's not even crazy. A category.
Yeah, it has a name that I think this is a drink I've never tried. So we come to that in a minute. But let's talk about this beautiful Ricelia from La Venenosa, because now I've tried a sip already and the smoothness is gone, but you have a very like explosion of a very specific taste. So the tequila is like something smooth, easy to drink.
Mineral.
40% ABV.
Yeah.
And this one is like just like boom. It's like an explosion. So you have a very, very different impression when you take a sip of that one.
Completely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It really detonates a lot of... for me, it's also a bit emotional. You know, it really gives you a lot to think about, not just about the spirit itself. I mean, I have the pleasure to know this producer. And it really takes me to the place of origin. You know, every time you sip it, it really brings you like unbelievable...
So you have a picture of the place, of the Palenque.
Exactly, yeah.
And I've been to the Palenque and it's...
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
I mean, it's really...
And they have been growing, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, when I went, it was like roots, really basic. And I arrived, I was like, no way this is made here, you know? Because the way you see the production is like, okay, this is truly, truly archaic in the way of how things are made. But the expression itself is super nice, you know? So, I mean, you expect that everything is more... planned and stuff, but it's really, I think there's a lot of alchemy in the way this product is made, and I think the Campos family really has like a like a gift for it, you know. No wonder they are also like the last ones that are producing in this area.
Yeah,
and
it's true.
So I mean, in clay pot distillation, it's also very rare to see in Jalisco. I mean, I don't know, I haven't tried any other spirit within Jalisco that is distilled with clay, but maybe...
Sierra del Tigre.
Sierra del
Tigre is the other one. But it's not common. It's true. It's not a common... Now we're going to go to another clay pot distillation, but it's true. In Jalisco, it's not very common. The clay pot distillation... There is many kinds of distillations, but it's not a common one, the clay pot. Mm. I mean, anyhow, now that if you go to the Palenque, they have a deck. It's already cement... Where you stand on before it used to be just like
the earth.
Earth.
Yeah.
And now the Palenque has grown. Did you go to the fields with Arturo?
No, we didn't have time. But I mean, also like the pit was just like the pit. You know, there was no stone. There was no stone.
It was a pit. It was a hole in the
dangerous,
earth.
Yeah. Dangerous hole where you drink raicilla around.
And then also like the fermentation area was just like that was walled with stones.
Uh-huh.
But it was truly like, okay, this is very, very basic in a way, because you know you realize that they're really okay, we want to do it the best we can with the tools that we have or that are around and always sticking to traditionality, you know, like on the old school way, which is what's all about, you know, like.
And are they afraid if they industrialize it more that they lose something of their mastery or their expertise? Is it that it's like, okay, we've done this traditionally, we have this old knowledge, and that's why we're doing it this way?
Yeah, I mean, don't fool yourself with the archaic production of the spirit. Arturo Campos' son, he has gone all the way through school, you know, so he is, you know, he's knowledgeable about things, and his studies are also directly webbed to what he does. So I think that's a very solid reason why they decide to use this mechanical grinder, because it really plays no role in the taste. I mean, people can comment on this
esoteric role, but you know, like
there are different opinions, but I agree with Christian that sometimes when you take out, like when you're helping the family mash with a machete, you know, no, I want the perfect ancestral. Yeah, go do it yourself. Go mash with a machete.
8 hours.
Exactly. For 8 hours during days until you have the, or you have the family, which they're not so many. They're not like eight working. It's Arturo, his father, and I don't remember this other guy, but he's always with Arturo.
Yeah, yeah. This and is you.
They have to use some tools, man, that are available in the market.
Yeah, I mean, myself, I cannot tell the difference between mezcal that is like to tell you, oh, yeah, this has been done with Tahona, or
yeah,
this
me
has
neither.
Been done to with a mechanical grinder, and I don't know nobody that can do it.
But you, for example, you can tell the difference between clay and,
for sure.
Oh yeah,
wood or copper distillation. Right.
That's right. Yeah. That is more.
Some things. Everything matters, of course. In the final flavor, everything matters. But it's really complicated. What Christian just said is really a gray line. Like Tahona or grinder, mechanical grinder, complicated to define. Also, you can go. And yeah, exactly, to define in the mouth, because also the Tahona, they used to be rock, but then they changed and they used other materials. So
yeah,
in general, it's complicated, you know? And if you're helping the family, for me, I'm always for that.
Yeah, I understand. Okay, should we go to the next
spirit? Yeah, please, man. I mean, this one just, it gets me really excited. I mean, I thought we were just going to talk about Jalisco and not try any spirits, but I'm thrilled that we get to try the Tucci.
What is a talk about mezcal without tasting it?
Very important. I agree with Albert.
they go along, no doubt. And I believe that what we have next is a truly rare expression and a truly rare spirit that is made. Well, I'm talking about an ethnical spirit.
This goes beyond ancestral, in the definition of how it's made, beyond, you know?
It's from La Venenosa again, and it's Etnica Tucci.
Tucci.
We have this in stock as well. It's just a rare spirit, you know? So you have a very kind of popular person that is actually making this spirit, this Pisciano. Rafael, his full name is Don Rafael Carrillo Pisciano, and he's also like an artist. Within his community, he's in a very extremely remote community, as Diego was mentioning before. You know, you cannot go more north than that, and it's the Wirarica community. You know, the Huichol community is more commonly known as Huichol community. And they are really, really far away from everything.
They're within the state of Jalisco, and it takes you around 10 hours to get to their village. And man, in a straight line, it's like 300 kilometers maximum, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no straight line to the town. You have to go around, go out by Zacatecas.
It's hard
to get there.
There's also self-government community. So
is it kind of like
to get it there?
Is it like a native community or is it like a hippie?
It's a native community. Uh-huh. We Raricos are people living like they have their own system of schools and everything inside mm-hmm. the community. We have mm-hmm. done. So this is not the first thing we do. The first time I worked together with Christian,
true.
We were bringing some art from this community, not mezcal, but art from these communities. And it sold quite good here. And then we lost the link in Mexico because...
Again, the distances and times, right? It was tricky to keep it steady in a way. And we thought, okay...
But it sold good, man.
Yeah,
and it sold good. It
was good, but it was hard to kind of keep it stable because this community has a very different perception of how time goes,
mm-hmm.
and that's maybe a bit difficult for us in Europe to grasp.
Okay, so we go by a clock and the date, and that is not necessarily
that exactly.
They're more about like, okay, I'm gonna have this project, mm-hmm. of artistical project, or this one thing, and.
When it's done.
Exactly. It's ready when exactly. it's ready. You know? That also kind of invites you to think about what's the relationship that these people have with their community and with the land itself, you know,
mm-hmm.
And the patience with the plants, which, you know, as you everybody knows and in this room where we are, patience is what really gives agave, you know, its own profile and mm-hmm. and all of these magical things that we like to talk about. Like it is time, really. So I mean, it's a extremely low quantity of spirit that comes out of this community once a year. I believe it's
70 liters.
Yeah, I think they have managed year to year to improve a little bit. I think that they reached the 100 liters last year. According to what Stefan told me.
I believe that.
Which is still a joke, you know, like how do you distribute 100 liters in the world, you know, with a spirit that is just very culturally. It's a spirit that is still developing. Stefan, the owner of La Venenosa, went to the community because he read in one book.
So Esteban, who was on our...
correct. Esteban.
You've maybe heard him before. He's knowledgeable and charming. And he read in one book... about the Tucci, and that was also made in this specific community and so on. So he decided to go, you know,
mm-hmm.
and he made the travels, ask around, and I don't remember if it was the wife of Pisano or the mother of Pisano who received Esteban, and Esteban told what he was all about, you know, like I'm about agave spirits and I would like to do this with the community and so on. And he was told that they were waiting for him, you know, in a way. So let's talk about spirituality, you know.
That's fascinating. So basically this spirit was discovered because Esteban went on a quest for it.
Another detail that's important to say, the spirit hadn't been made, because then you have also the thing that big brewer factories were already there. Coca-Cola was already there.
Yeah.
Sorry, Coca-Cola, but... But they stopped making it, and when Esteban got there, he was told, we haven't made it for 25 years.
Wow.
It was my father who made it. So Santos said, I know how to make it because I saw my father. But the first two or three lots, Santos is also the name of Rafael, the first two or three lots may suck.
Yeah.
I saw these batches, and now that I visited Esteban, and it's a failed Tucci batch that it was not good enough to put it in the market, because, you know, it's a generational thing. I mean, we in Agavera and Rinserum, we seek to have products that have this generational background.
Mm-hmm.
And this was really like recovery, you know, just bring back to life a spirit that has been lost, to industrial drinks, to cheap beer, and, you know, like a mix of tequila, you know, who was like, okay, what do we do? For the community, is like, what do we do? Do we break our backs making this?
Or do we go the easy way, buy a cheap bottle of
50
something.
Cents and you get... Yeah, exactly.
And so, you know, it really changed the perspective, because all the Western vibes do arrive to these remote areas every now and then.
They do.
But then again, you know, this guy, you know, Esteban, who really has explored all of the expressions. I mean, no producer came to him like, you want to bottle my product? He has been the one who's seeking the producers, the good ones or extraordinary ones, like the ones that we're trying right now. So you get an expression that really tells a cultural story, you know. That's why it's called etnica, which means, you know, ethnic. And you get a spirit that is more about the culturality of it. And I mean, for my appreciation of this spirit, it's not like super fun and elegant and
round
and not perfect. Yet. But it's
the story that's behind the spirit.
It packs some very interesting energy as well, you know, the spirit itself.
Have you smelled it?
It
doesn't have the power that, but it's still a work in progress, you know. Mm-hmm. This, maybe in 2 or 3 years, we say this Tucci, man, this is really some of the best agave distill I've tried.
So basically with the Tucci, it will really depend on the year. So every year will be a lot different. I know it's with artisanal products.
But it will be more radical in this one.
It will be more radical.
So you will have deviations, but they're not as crazy or enormous as with a Tucci, especially with this one.
Yeah.
I mean, until date, as a product or a spirit that is labeled within a brand, I don't know any that is produced with this specific agave, Masparillo from Jalisco. I mean, Masparillo from elsewhere in Mexico you might find, but not from Jalisco.
Yeah.
And so we have in this one 43. It's the graduation
0.4,
which you know it is already something, and it's nice for the taste. We have a very archaic again way of production, so the harvesting and the cooking happens. The harvesting happens with machete. I'm sorry, and then the cooking is classic mamposteria. Conical oven barbacoa, and then again the chopping. It's with a machete. So there's no tajona there.
So they take the 8 hours off like...
Just machete. Bam, bam, bam. So
The tajona is faster, man. That's why I say this is even ancestral. This doesn't even qualify for ancestral, you know? The tajona, you have a donkey going around, or maybe you're pulling the rock, but with this one, you're mashing with a machete, you know? It's like...
Brock so bacon. there is not even like the... Archimedal technology.
No, involved. Not even.
It's like
no. There's no canoe or bat to smash it, which you know might be a little bit forward. It's just really like okay, I have this machete.
Of course, it will improve. You know, of course, it will improve.
Who should buy this product then? So who would you recommend this product to?
I mean, I would recommend this product for people that really wanna, you know, try the edge of what is with agave spirits and how extreme can it be. Somebody that wants to get into a cultural product, somebody that wants to collect, a collector of spirits. I mean, this product will only get more expensive in time. That's I can you know sign on that.
Put your hands on fire.
And so it is indeed it's something rare, you know, and it's something fun to have, and it's amazing to share with, you know, as well if you have the right crowd. Because if you don't have it, you just don't take it out of where it is. You know, you let it sit and you do the waiting game on it.
If you're an agave enthusiast, I think...
A serious one.
A serious agave enthusiast, I think you should have a bottle of Tucci. And maybe if you really want to see the evolution of a product, not only one, but one from each lot. So keep on asking, is the new lot here?
Every 2 years. Here?
And have 2 or 3 so that you can compare and say, this is an evolution on a product that you are sure that it's not being manipulated. You know, it's not like they added this or that. No, it's just the guy is getting better.
Yeah. What is also interesting, so at this very end, you said this. So these guys are very sustainable. They take their time. So if it's, you know, if they don't have...
I have a saying on sustainability. I think all the practice of distilling agaves is not really sustainable. I think the way they approach agave, it is in a way very responsible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they do harvest the agave that is ready around their community and their village. It's not about like, oh, we have all this agave, let's just get it, you know. It's really about, okay, we have this amount of agave for this year, and this will be the amount that you get, you know.
I think that one of the big, like, not contradiction, but it's kind of the challenges or oxymorons in agave spirits in general, because you have the plants that take their time to grow.
Yeah.
So you have this waiting period, and on the other hand, you have the economic interest, and basically finding the right balance to, you know, have a constant stream flow of products, versus also make sure that you're gonna have a constant stream of products in the future, and not just go submit to the greed because there is a mezcal hype and everybody in the US is crazy about mezcal at the moment.
For sure.
So I think this is going to be interesting to see.
It will for sure play a role. That we can be completely sure it's going to play a role, because when there are more producers, and then we have to see how it develops. You know, we know this expression, we know this producer, and we know he's doing it right. But then if the hype arrives, it's complicated that really a hype arrives in this. This is a remote location.
Remote, man.
It's even dangerous to get there. So I don't like saying that about Mexico, but sometimes
it's true.
But sometimes it's true. You know,
I mean,
but
you might go there. I mean, maybe nothing's gonna happen to you.
Yeah, yeah.
But your vehicle is gonna be. You're not gonna have your vehicle. You know, like, if you just wanna go like Dos Hombres or whatever. You know,
Dos Hombres?
It's a brand that you will not be interested in. Anyway, so I believe that this product really is in the middle of what you're saying. You know, it's both highly interesting product to get into and to nerd in. It won't be available for the market. Like most of the raicillas, is not something that you can scale because you already have all the state is already prone for development of the tequila, the first expression that we had. So it just stays small, you know, and I think that's valuable for the market, for the culturality of all things agave, and I think it's the way it should be, you know. Keep some stuff small and unique, and you will have recognition for all the categories of mezcal in the different states, you know, so in the different stages that there are, like tequila being the oldest denomination in the planet outside Europe. Mezcal being the biggest denomination in the planet in terms of territory.
And producers.
Well,
both. I mean, both numbers are
cool.
Biggest.
That's, you know, some good data. And raicilla, which is, as we said at the beginning, the niche of the niche, you know, like something that cannot be scaled because the territory is already taken by Blue Agave. Mm. It's just about protecting the ways of production that are very diverse between the different areas, where some producers dare to produce something else than Tequilana Weber. So, I mean, it is definitely interesting to look at Jalisco with this scope of the products that we had and the information that we share, which I believe it's something interesting. I mean, of course, there's way more information to dig in, and I will encourage every reader, especially if you are available to read in Spanish, to seek books. There's plenty of literature in English, but I believe there's a lot of quality in books that are written in Spanish as well, and not a lot of people are looking at them. So it is because the market is made for people that speak English, you know, like the American markets and stuff. So, I mean, if you really want to get into it, seek these products, all of them. Maybe buy a book in Spanish about agave spirits. There's plenty we can recommend you as well, both in Elixir of the Gods.
You have one here. So
that's maybe the Bible for me.
We like that a lot, yeah.
Okay, it's called Agua de las Verdes Matas.
Yeah. It's a historical book, but it really goes like it's... Mm.
It touches different subjects about agave production, both in tequila and mezcal, and this little fine beautiful line that is raicilla. It puts you like a nice little map of what it is and what it was and what might be in the future. So I mean, this and other books that I can recommend in my platform in Agavera, or we can also post in Elixir of the Gods, would be nice to have, you know. And I want to thank you, Albert, for inviting me again.
No. Thank you for coming, man.
Yeah,
I mean, we put on a show also because of the people who are on the show. I mean, sometimes maybe we get boring, me and Albert. So that's why we want to invite some, and especially characters like you that are working on the market, very knowledgeable. You talked about Agavera briefly, but I would also like to add Christian also is also a When he talks about culture, he's giving master classes around Europe to the different distributors that there is around Europe to let them know about different agave distills. But he's one of the guys that I would say he's most qualified. He's most qualified in the subject.
You're lovely.
Yeah. And so thank you for especially for sharing your knowledge with us and our little audience. What I learned in this last hour or so was I've never thought about it this way, but so when you look at Jalisco and the name tequila has a very big stamp on it, an influence on it, but there are some people still there, and you know, tequila is a big industry, but there's still some people there who are kind of in a way rebels and say, we do things our way, you know, we don't care about like the quick money, we want to do like a good product that's interesting, that has a heart and that has a soul. And I kind of liked it. I'm always, you know, when you watch a football game and you don't care about the two teams so much, you always root for the underdog.
The small one.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
And I think Brasilia is that. And I mean, yeah, the extreme is the Tucci, where it's like the underdogs of the underdogs in a way.
Or also like the other agave spirits within Jalisco that decide not to certify their products as tequila.
Though
it's an agave and they have all this culturality and generations behind them, you know. We already tried some spirit that was right here in this kind of a point or gray line that I'm mentioning. So if you don't know what I'm talking about, I would encourage you to maybe listen again to the Juntas Gracias podcast.
You're going to pay attention this time. You'll find it. It's there. And we were thrilled by it.
Yeah.
I would close, no? Because
I think you have to go, Christian, right?
So I need to run, sorry.
Thank you for being here, sharing your wisdom.
This was Jalisco.
Yeah. And so we're going to go to Oaxaca again.
Yeah, we're going to go on the next show. We're gonna go to Oaxaca, try and be more specific on Oaxaca. These are the two biggest producing states right now, and maybe this second season we go to these two, and next year we explore more states, but we thought it would be important to go to Jalisco and Oaxaca on this second season. Thank you for being on the first chapter, mate.
Pleasure, man.
Thank you.
See you in Oaxaca.
Yeah, see you in Oaxaca. And for your information, guys, so we have visited two bars, very cool bars for our podcast, and we have two interviews in the bag already. We try to get a third or maybe a fourth one even for this season to connect with bars who have such a passion that they care different non-industrial artisanal products. We want to keep that up. And if you have tips, or if you one of these bars, reach out to us so that we can talk to you and that we can find them.
There is a scene of mezcal bars in the US that's happening. It's hype. We don't know the scene in Europe, and we want to create a little map of you guys distributing mezcal directly to the customer and having a mezcaleria and everything, so that when people ask themselves, I'm going to Rome, or I'm going to Milan, or I'm going to Madrid, or to Barcelona, or to Amsterdam, Berlin, Frankfurt, Munich, whatever.
Manchester,
exactly. Manchester, any place you go, you know where a good where you can find a good mezcaleria. Just, we're trying to map that out. It's a long project, but
yeah.
Guys, if you're here and you're a bartender or a bar owner, just reach out. Would be cool. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And see you next time. Bye-bye.
Woo-hoo. Ciao.
Ciao.